I'll be better worse than thought last night. I'd be discussing eschatology. Now, I don't know what that means, so I'm going to talk about prophecy. We'll be dealing primarily in the prophetic field with Israel, because this is the only way to really understand prophecy. If you take the time to study the background of the nation of Israel and the history of the nation in connection with the biblical record, you'll find that Israel is the calendar to prophecy. It doesn't matter what period of history they may have been in. And so I think you thoroughly understand prophecy, and to really get acquainted with what's going on in the world today, it's necessary to know the conditions under which Israel was launched as a nation, because those conditions have determined the history of Israel until now. And they have a very definite bearing upon what lies ahead for the nation of Israel. Israel, unlike any other nation, didn't come into being by its own choice or as a result of conquest or revolution or what have you, but God made Israel. God told Abraham he was going to make a nation. From his loins, he confirmed this to his son Isaac and then to his grandson Jacob, and he told Jacob that he would be the source of the nation. And he was. Jacob's sons became the tribes of the nation. And the nation, Israel really became a nation when they possessed the promised land, or the land of the Canaanites. They had been a people prior to this time. While they were in Egypt, they were a people. They were the sons of Israel. But they became a nation with a national government, and were recognized by the rest of the world as a nation with which they had to deal when they came in through the land of Canaan. And prior to their coming into the land, en route from Egypt to the promised land, they were given some very specific instructions as to what they must do and what they might expect when they got there. And I submit to you that everything that has happened to Israel from that point until now has been contingent upon what Israel did in response to the conditions that God laid down to that nation. Let me get a thing or two clear here before you put me in your pigeonhole somewhere and I'll be in the wrong pigeonhole. We state unequivocally that Israel was a nation by God's decision and not our own, and that Israel's ultimate end is determined by God Himself and will be accomplished no matter what the Jew does. But between their origin and between the ultimate end of the nation, there are many things that have come upon the nation and that have involved the world as a result of what Israel did and what Israel didn't do. And so the human responsibility enters into it also. Since this is true, I want us to look at the conditions that were laid down to Israel on their possession of the land, because I think they are projected in every aspect of prophecy we'll be looking into for the rest of this week. Israel received instructions for their conquest and for their separation once they had gotten into the land of Canaan at Sinai. If you look in Exodus chapter 34, we'll begin here. Exodus chapter 34, verses 10 to 16. Moses, of course, is in charge here, and he says, "Take heed to thyself, lest thou make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land whither thou goest, lest it be for a snare in the midst of thee. But ye shall destroy their altars, break down their images, and cut down their groves. Thou shalt worship no other god, for the Lord whose name is Jealous is a jealous God. Lest thou make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land, and they go whoring after their gods, and one call thee, and thou eat of his sacrifices. And thou take of their daughters unto thy sons, and their daughters go whoring after their gods, and make thy sons go whoring after their gods, and thou shalt make thee no molten image." Now here is a summary of what Israel must do to survive in the land that God had given to Abraham and to his seed after. There are two or three basic things I want to emphasize right here. One of them is that they must thoroughly purge the land. There must be no kings left who are finally, no people left. There must be no semblance of any other religion left in that land. It's got to be clean. Somebody always gets we have a terrible hang-up these days about tolerance, you know. And tolerate everybody and everything, but that's bad because they can't put up with us much. You just don't fit in the tolerance program. And somebody gets all excited in reading the Old Testament about God being unfair by destroying these people in the land and destroying their religion. But let me remind you of a thing or two. Number one, these people were imposters in the land in the first place. God had given it to Abraham. They got down in there close to what is now known as Nablus. God said, "Abraham, I'm going to give this land to you. See, the Canaanites dwell here, but I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to give it to your people after you. It's your land. It's the only land on earth that has a deed recorded with its boundaries described in the Word of God. And that's the better reason I've got the little piece of land I live on. It belonged to the seed of Abraham. So why weren't they living there? The famine came in the land, and they headed to Egypt, according to prophecy. And they had been in Egypt for a few hundred years. And while they were gone, these other people just took over. He said, "Well, it isn't right to destroy their religion." Let me remind you that the kind of religion they had was the most abominable thing a man could conceive on the face of the earth. It was deeply involved in sex worship. It was deeply involved in human sacrifice. They were burning their children alive on the altars as human sacrifice. They were running them through the fires of the valley of Hinnom. It was an abomination to the human race, not only to God. And this is the kind of thing that God said you can't compromise with. You've got to clean the land. Now, there's another thing that we ought to point out in these instructions Moses laid down. One is, don't you make any covenant with their religious system. You get it out of there. This is my land. This is going to be my, I'm going to be your God in it. And he said, don't you let the people hang around, because if you do, your sons will marry their daughters. You know, boys just have a way of doing it. They marry them. I don't know what you think about it. You want to be wrong if you're business, but this is the thing that broke from the sons of God saw the daughters of an apostate group and began to intermarry with them, and they got a terrible immoral situation on the earth until man couldn't think of anything but evil, and God just wiped them out. And Moses said, now, you go into this land and you let the people stay there, and the next thing you know, they will begin to intermarry. And that will destroy the identity and the purity of the people that God has saved. And he said the natural consequence is, once they marry them, they're going to get involved in religion. How many cases have you seen where a good old Baptist girl married a Methodist boy and she's going to reform and make a Baptist out of him?
It didn't work.
It's a polluted both streams about what happens usually. Sometimes takes them both out of circulation as far as the church is concerned. God said, these boys marry these girls, these girls marry the boys, and the next thing you know, they're going to get involved in their religion also. And they're going to corrupt the religion of the Lord. You know, we will find out later, this is what got Solomon, all of his problems. You know what the most powerful waterfall in the world is, don't you? A woman's tears. It'll turn things that the rivers won't turn. And when these lives of Solomon begin to say, now you've said a lot more to Hebrew women than you did, as you haven't been fired us, and you haven't built even all for our gods. And Solomon said, oh, okay, yeah, I'll put you right up to the amount of bottles, just above the temple. And he did. And he came in trouble. And he said, God said, this won't happen. You get intermarried with them and you begin to bow at their altars. You begin to eat the food brought to their sacrifices, and you're going to be in trouble. So clean the land. Clean the land. There could be no mistake in this. Moses emphasized this thing to the younger generation in the 33rd chapter of Numbers, if you'll turn there just a moment. The younger generation came along and was fear that they not realize what the whole score was, and for Moses to let them know that there had been no change, he spells it out again in the 33rd chapter of Numbers. Verses 51, 2, and 3. Speak unto the children of Israel, God is speaking to Moses now, and say unto them, when ye pass over Jordan into the land of Canaan, then shall ye drive out all the inhabitants of the land from before you, and destroy all their pictures, and destroy all their molten images, and quite cut down all their high places. He didn't say some of them, but that word all of them must keep going in. And ye shall dispossess the inhabitants of the land and dwell therein, for I have given you the land to possess. So the younger generation knew what the score was and knew what to expect. Now, not only did God tell Israel what they must do when they got to the land and why, but he told Israel what they could expect if they didn't. They didn't go into this thing not realizing the consequences. Turn with me, and right on down there, I have to turn. If you're using this Scofield Bible, it's been well over there. I never heard so many fellows touch Scofield and only use his Bible as they have this morning. I think every preacher got up here, Brad done Scofield's Bible and gives him the mystery. Well, I got one too. But I don't believe much of his notes.
I got started as a boy, and I can find my place, and I know where it is on the page. And then, but in the 51st and 56th verses, Moses, God through Moses, tells the people exactly what they may expect if they don't purge the land. If you will not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then it shall come to pass that those that ye let remaining of them shall be pricks in your eyes and thorns in your side, and shall vex you in the land wherein ye dwell. Moreover, it shall come to pass that I shall do unto you as I thought to do unto them. Now let that one register. Moses has instructed the people, you clean the land, you get the people out of there, you tear down their altars, you purge the land and move in and establish God's nation and the worship of Jehovah. If you don't do it, you let the people stay there and you tolerate them and you compromise with them, I'll do to you that I'm proposing not to do to them. But what had God proposed to do to the people of the land of Israel? Drive them out of them. To put it a little differently and say the same thing, God is simply saying to Israel, if you don't drive these people out, you won't stay in the land. I'll disperse you. You can't live in the land of Israel unless you purify the land and maintain a separated standing before me. And this didn't change. It hasn't changed in the list of the day, for as that's concerned. Now, there's another thing in the 32nd chapter of Numbers, in verse 23. God made it quite clear to these people that they couldn't conceal the matter if they didn't do it. You know, it's amazing how people get the idea that because they can't look God right in the eyes, and he just doesn't see what goes on. But he does. And so God said, now I want to point out something. You're not going to be able to conceal the fact that if you compromise with these people, you're not going to be able to conceal it. Numbers 32:23. But if you will not do so, behold, you have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out. You can't marry a Jew to a Gentile and raise a thoroughbred Jew, and somebody's going to know it. And you can't leave a Gentile altar, pagan altar, standing around, and a Jew bowing to Jesus without it being found out. And he said, the consequences are going to bear witness against you. You're going to catch up with yourself. This is the proposition. Look in the first chapter of Deuteronomy, and you'll find that just before Moses' death, he warns these people again of what they may expect. Well, did your Bible have Deuteronomy in it? Yeah, here's one. It's mine too. Look at the Deuteronomy. Verses 23 through 27. Now, Moses is not far from ending his leadership of the people of Israel. And once more he warns the people of what they must do as they come into the land and what they is required of them. And I'm about to read the delayed reference, excuse me. Take heed unto yourselves, lest you forget the covenant of the Lord your God, which he made with you, and make you a graven image or the likeness of anything which the Lord thy God hath forbidden thee. For the Lord thy God is a consuming fire, even a jealous God. When thou shalt beget children, and children's children, and ye shall have remained long in the land. Now they came in with big ambitions, you know.
They hadn't had a piece of ground that they could plant their own fig tree on in that generation. And they came up with big ambition. We're going to do what God says. But now Moses said, "So you've been there a long time." And here's where the danger comes. Look at W.B. Riley's church. When he was Mr. Fundamental in the north, you could turn on the beam fairly solid. But look at it today, after a long time. Look at several of the others that you can look at, that the great men that put them where they were are gone. And the children's children have polluted the stream, and they're no longer sound. And you've been there a long time. And shall corrupt yourself. He didn't say, perhaps you corrupt yourself. And you've been there a long time, and you knew what was going to happen. You shall corrupt yourselves and make a graven image of the likeness of anything, and shall do evil in the sight of the Lord thy God, to provoke him to anger. I call heaven and earth to witness against you this day, that ye shall soon utterly perish from off the land whereunto ye go over Jordan to possess it. Ye shall not prolong your days upon it, but shall utterly be destroyed, and the Lord shall scatter you among the nations, and ye shall be left few in number among the heathen, where the Lord shall lead you. Now look at the prophecy involved here. They haven't even gotten to the promised land yet. They're not even a nation with a government set up yet. And yet God says when you get in the land, you've been there a long time, you're going to compromise, you're going to corrupt the land, and eventually you're going to be scattered from the land among other nations on the face of the earth. And it happened, hasn't it? You say, how did the Jews come to be scattered? Here's the answer. Here's the answer. And we'll find that this is exactly what took place. Just as God had spelled it out in the fable. It looked like the people had seen God had spelled it out like this, they wouldn't have gotten into it. And it looked like a lot of Baptist people had a few things to do on that, they wouldn't have gotten into a lot of things we've gotten into too. But we do. Human nature has a good progress. The enemy in the land was to be summarily defeated. I want to take time to read the 7th chapter of Deuteronomy. Verses 16 and verses 24 through 26, which again goes into the proposition of destroying the enemy in the land, even destroying all the kings, leaving no vestige of the people, the pagans in the land, whatever. Now the question arises, what did Israel do when they came into the land on the heels of this kind of instruction? They had been told plainly, you must purge the land. They had been told plainly, if they didn't do it, they were in trouble. They had been told plainly that if they got in trouble, they would eventually be dispersed from the land. What did they do? They defiled. They compromised. Turn to the first chapter of Judges. I'll tell you, there wasn't a tribe in the lot that completely purged the area to which he was assigned. Look after verse 19 for a starter in Judges chapter 1. They come into the land and they're going to follow the instructions of the Lord. And the Lord said, was with Judah, and he drove out the inhabitants of the mountain, but he could not drive out the inhabitants of the valley. And so he left them there. Verse 21. The children of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites that inhabited Jerusalem. They didn't even call it Jerusalem. Look at verse 25. And when he showed them the entrance into the city, they smote the city with the edge of the sword, but they let go the man and all his family. Look at verse 27. Neither did Manasseh drive out the inhabitants of Bethshean and her towns, nor Tamak and her towns, nor the inhabitants of Dor and her towns, nor the inhabitants of Ibleam and her towns, nor the inhabitants of Megiddo
and her towns, but the Canaanites would dwell in that land. Look at verse 28. And it came to pass when Israel was strong that they took the Canaanites to tribute and did not utterly drive them out. This reminds me so of the course America is following today. Israel became strong in the land and they decided they didn't need to follow God's instructions any longer. That they could take care of themselves. So they compromised with communist China and took nationalist China into peace. And we stabbed Israel in the back and tried to make a bargain with the Arabs, you know. I'm talking about America's parallel today. We better watch our step. We're headed for trouble. But back to the situation here. Israel is a strong nation, so it isn't necessary to drive the people out, like Moses said. You can tax them to death. That's a familiar system, isn't it? We can tax them. We'll put them on the tribute and let the Canaanites live in the land. And they can't rise up with heavy taxes on them. But they've forgotten the promise of God. Verse 29, Ephraim didn't clean his area. Verse 30, Zebulun didn't clean his area. Verse 31, Asher didn't clean his area. Verse 33, Naphtali didn't clean his area. The Amorites, in verse 34, forced the children of Dan in the mountains. The whole story was a story of compromise. They didn't clean the people from the land. They didn't destroy all their altars. That was the end result. I want, before we look at this, to look at Joshua's last council. Now, they've come into the land. They've compromised the land. And now Joshua, who is their leader, meets them at Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. And he says in the 23rd chapter of Joshua, well, look at the beginning of verse 7, verses 7 and 8. Joshua says that ye come not among these nations, these that remain among you, even though you've compromised the situation, don't come among them, neither make mention of the name of their God, nor cause to swear by them, neither serve them, nor bow yourselves unto them, but cleave unto the Lord your God. Joshua says, even though you've compromised this situation, don't get involved with it. Joshua. Well, look at the beginning of verse 7, verses 7 and 8. Joshua says that ye come not among these nations, these that remain among you, even though you've compromised the situation, don't come among them, neither make mention of the name of their God, nor cause to swear by them, neither serve them, nor bow yourselves unto them, but cleave unto the Lord your God. Joshua said, even though you've compromised this situation, don't get involved with it. Just don't do it. I look on down in verses 12 and 13. Else if you do in any wise go back and cleave unto the remnant of these nations, even these that remain among you, and shall make marriages with them, and go in unto them, and they to you, know for a certainty that the Lord your God will no more drive out any of these nations from before you, but they shall be snares and traps unto you, and scourges in your sides, and thorns in your eyes, and ye perish from off the good land which the Lord your God hath given you. They had further warnings. Again and again they were warned that they couldn't survive in this land. if they got involved with the people and the religions of that land. And the people committed themselves to it. Look in the 24th chapter of Joshua, beginning of verse 19. These people signed the dotted line that they would keep this thing true. Joshua said to the people, "Ye cannot serve the Lord, for He is an holy God, He is a jealous God. He'll not forgive your transgressions and your sins. You can't serve Him. You just can't measure up to it. If ye forsake the Lord and serve strange gods, then He'll turn and do you hurt and consume you after He's done you good." Now listen. "And the people said unto Joshua, Nay, but we'll serve the Lord. Don't tell us we can't serve Him. We're going to serve the Lord." And Joshua said to the people, "You're witnesses against yourselves that you have chosen you the Lord to serve Him." And they said, "We are witnesses. We signed the dotted line, and we signed it as witnesses. It's our signature that we will meet God's conditions, know what He's going to do to us if He doesn't." There was no excuse, no alibi for it. None whatever. Now, look in Judges, the second chapter. After they went into the land, and they had compromised, they had not thoroughly purged the people, but they compromised the land, they're reminded of the consequences again. The second and third verses of Judges chapter 2. Well, let's begin at verse 1 and get the whole thing. "The angel of the Lord came up from Gilgal to Bochim and said, I made you to go up from Egypt, and I brought you into the land which I swore unto your fathers. And I said, I will never break my covenant with you, and ye shall make no league with the inhabitants of this land, and ye shall throw down their altars. But ye have not obeyed my voice. Why have ye done this? Wherefore also I also said, I will not drive them out from before you, but they shall be thorns in your sides, and their God shall be a snare unto you. You haven't purged the land, and according to my promise, they're going to be a snare from here on. Your problems are going to emanate from your compromise when you came into the land. And it's going to eventually move them out of the land according to the prophecy of Moses at Mount Sinai." Now you follow me and see if this isn't exactly what happened. First thing that happened, they rejected God's system of Jacob. If you'll turn to 1 Samuel, the 8th chapter, and verse 5 for a starter. "And said unto him, Behold, thou art old, and thy sons walk not in thy ways." Talking to Samuel now, the prophet and the judge. This is the people appealing to Samuel. "You're old and your sons don't do like they ought to do. Make us a king to judge us," listen, "like all the nations." Where'd they get the idea? From the people that they left in the land that God said they should have driven out. "Make us a king like the other nations have." Their eyes became clouded with the imposing royal robe and crown and chariot that the enemy drove into battle. They wanted a king like the other nations. Where'd they get this idea? Where'd the problem come from? The people whose altars they left in the land. Now, you'll follow this reading in verses 19 and 20. There's this whole thing deals with it, but the end result is what we're after. Nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel, and they said, "Nay, but we'll have a king over us. Nothing you say is going to stop us. We're going to have a king, that we also may be like all the nations, and that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles." Their ambition was to be like the source of their compromise, like all the nations around us. Now this wasn't costing anything. This will out them right here. God knew what Israel was going to do. He knew they were going to demand a king, and he knew they were going to have a king eventually. So he had set up the conditions for the king before they ever called for it, because he knew the way Israel was going. He told them back in Moses' day that they'd compromise the land, and they'd pollute the land, and they'd be driven from it. And so he made plans in advance when the thing was going to take place. All right. The seventh verse of this eighth chapter of 1 Samuel points out an important fact also, that the real rejection was not a rejection of judgment, but it was a rejection of God's leadership. This is exactly what Moses had done. You'll go in here, you'll get involved with their religions and the pagans around you, and there'll be thorns in your flesh, and the first thing you know, you want to do like they do, and you'll choose their system against God. Now look at verse 7. The Lord said unto Samuel, "Hearken unto the voice of the people, in all that they say unto thee, for they have not rejected thee." Samuel kind of feeling sorry for himself. He thought he'd flubbed the dove, and they'd rejected him. But he said, "They haven't rejected thee, they have rejected me, that I should reign over them." This is where the problem is. And it's where every problem in the matter of truth and separation comes. People don't cease to do right and begin to pursue the camps of the enemy, but for one purpose, they want to rebel against God. And it's done. You put my 2 cents worth in right here concerning our present day society. What wrong in our present day society anyhow? They rebel on the campus, they rebel in their homes, they rebel in the seat of national government, they rebel anywhere they are. What's the problem? It's the matter of depravity showing through man is rebellious by nature. He has rejected God's standards, and he pursues the course of rebellion, and he will pursue it to his own destruction. And the same principle brought the downfall of Israel as a nation. This is the thing that's taking place in our land before our very eyes. Now, once they had the king in Israel, and they had gone into paganism. And once they had the king led them further into paganism. If you'll look at 1 Kings, the 11th chapter now, we'll, I think, have just about time for this, and I'll make a mark right here. But with the pagan king went the pagan herald. Somebody said, "Well, why is it God endorsed multiple marriage in the Old Testament? And he doesn't in the New Testament." He didn't endorse it in the Old Testament. Multiple marriage came in with the pagan harem that came with the pagan kingship. And so when Saul became king, he built his pagan harem. When David became king, he had the pagan harem. When Solomon became king, he out-harmed them all. He had money, He could build a place to put them. He had money to support them. He could show them a good time, and he did. He did. If you look in the 11th chapter of 1 Kings, all you have to do is just read here because it's spelled out. But King Solomon loved many strange women. I just love one, and she'd had me in hot water. Together with the daughter of Pharaoh, listen now, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Zidonians, and Hittites, listen, of the nations concerning which the Lord said unto the children of Israel, ye shall not go in unto them, neither shall they come in unto you, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. Solomon crave unto these in love. The very pagan tribes that God had named and specified they should not become involved in, Solomon loved their wise women and married them and brought them into his royal house. You say, well, but that was Solomon. Yes, it was Solomon, but there's no buts about it. You said, had 700 wives, princes, and 300 concubines. Listen, what did Moses tell the people of Israel that the pagans would do if they compromised with them? He said, they'll turn away your heart. All right, listen. His wives turned away his heart. Took it right out of the mouth of Moses. For it came to pass when Solomon was old that his wives turned away his heart after other gods. You fellows that are getting old remember this. I'm still young. And his heart was not perfect with the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. For Solomon went after Ashtaroth. Listen. Solomon went after Ashtaroth, the goddess of the Zidonians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. And Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord, and went not fully after the Lord as did David his father. Then did Solomon build in a high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, in the hill that is before Jerusalem. These abominations that Solomon worshipped were raised right on the Mount of Olives overlooking the Temple Mount. And for Moab, the abomination of the children of Ammon, and likewise did he for all his strange wives, he had 700 of them, which burnt incense and sacrificed unto their gods. And the Lord was angry with Solomon because his heart was turned from the Lord God of Israel, which had appeared unto him twice. Israel's on its way down. They had arisen to a great nation under David. They had become a nation that the nations around their borders feared, and their borders had expanded, and Solomon had become a wealthy and wise king that the princes of the earth envied. But he got involved with the pagans of the land that should have been driven out, and they brought his downfall and the downfall of Israel. You know the story. We'll deal with it more tomorrow. The kingdom divided. The northern kingdom went immediately into idolatry. The southern kingdom followed suit, and they all hung their hearts on the willows along the Euphrates River, because they didn't have a song to sing that far from home. And this is exactly what God had told the people through Moses before they ever got to the land would take place if they didn't purge the land. And we're going to find this week that the problem Israel is still in today originated by a violation of God's statement through Moses, the people, when they were set up as a nation in their own land.